Hey, Mark, it's take two.
Hey, Simon.
What are you typing just there as we start?
I'm just typing go.
Why are you typing that?
No, I'm just getting open a page for something which is going to come up in the thing, which I need to refer to something that I said some years ago, and I'm reminding myself. I'm about to quote myself.
Oh, okay.
Give me a break.
It's always one of my favourite...
always one of your favourite.
Do you have like a Kermode archive where you can just access everything that you've ever
said? I do. It's called Google.
Oh, okay. Okay. Fair enough. I'm just thinking Tom Hanks, who was star of Take One, if they were doing a Sword and Sandals epic...
What could he play?
How about the Sheriff of Nottingham?
I know he could definitely do that.
Sheriff of Nottingham is not in the Bible story that I recall, but you could probably crowbar him in. So with all your expertise of the reviews to come next week, was Tom Hanks' accent anywhere close to...
Obviously, in that clip we heard, there's a touch of Elmer Fudd in Tom Hanks's, you know, the thing. And everyone's seen the trailer when he says, "You and me, we are the same poor, damaged little boy," in a kind of way which is kind of, you think... Because I realised that I actually didn't know what Colonel Tom Parker sounded like, because in all my Elvis obsessions, I don't think I'd looked up an interview with him speaking. Anyway, so there we go.
In the interview, he said, was he a crook? No, I don't think so.
Well, he was a crook.
Yeah, and I think everybody who sees the movie will go, yes, he was
a crook.
He absolutely was a crook. But...
As the line in the thing, it's a hilarious thing. It was an interview that I did because you couldn't do it. And I interviewed Tom Hanks and I said, what are you doing next? He said, I'm playing Colonel Tom Parker. And I said, who was neither a Colonel, nor a Tom, nor indeed a Parker. And that line almost exactly turns up in the film and I'm taking credit for it.
You certainly
Although
should.
Obviously, no.
You could, where there's a hit, there's a writ.
I haven't heard that before.
Yeah, you could be there for like, you could get 1% or something. Or
what's the other one? Is it where there's a will, there's a relative?
Very good. Thanks very much for all the fabulous emails, correspondence at kermodemail.com. This is from...
Shush, go away, stop. Sorry, don't know why that did that. Go on.
Okay. This is from Adrian, Gold Personal Survival, Food and Hygiene Certificate, IDTA Grade 4, Tap Stage and Jazz, father of daughter with blue-haired feminist girlfriend and husband to a resolutely non-pipe-smoking wife. There's his credits.
That's very good. That's very thorough.
Dear P-Wave and QT Interval, I mean... Okay. Heritage listener, FDE. I meant to email you this in your previous incarnation, but time got ahead of me.
Is this astrophysics on some level?
Well, that opening was.
Okay.
This may not be suitable for general consumption, but I thought it may give you both and the amazingly professional production team a bit of a giggle. That's why it's
saying. Yeah, exactly.
Having spent the last 25 years working various roles in the UK pharmaceutical industry, I'd like to say two things. This is what most of my kids would say, a bit random.
Okay.
Firstly, the portrayal of leaders, leadership and senior management in the pharma industry by the mainstream media is grossly incorrect.
Oh, the pharma industry, PHA. I thought you meant in the pharma.
Sorry, no,
as,
I
in like,
made that clear.
As in pharma Giles, you know.
Pharmaceutical
industry.
Grossly incorrect. With allegations such as the global suppression of cancer cures, etc., the current media profile infers a level of planning, ability and execution, strategic thinking and cooperation of which I see little to no evidence. Secondly, one of my early roles was working with a medicine used to treat patients who've had surgery to help restore the flow of blood to the heart muscle after a heart attack.
Okay.
It was a standard highlight of my month to be accompanied by a field-based, i.e. not office-based, manager who would make sure I was working in a company-approved manner. One such day with a new and particularly enthusiastic manager will remain with me for a long time. After a conversation with the cardiologist, the field manager and I retired to the WRVS, a reasonably priced haven now too often replaced by Costa, or in some cases, Greggs, to review my performance. Well, began the oddly irritated manager, I have to say I'm very disappointed. You were identified as an individual with high potential, but I really can't see that myself. You're totally disrespectful when referring to patients, and I'm amazed that the doctor didn't pull you up on it. You just can't call people cabbages. I assume these are people with cognitive issues after very bad heart attacks. It's just not on. How can you justify your behaviour? After calming myself, I simply wrote something on a piece of paper, slid it across the table to the manager saying, I'm going to get the coffees. I'll be back in a minute. The note read, capital C, capital A, capital B, capital G. Coronary artery bypass graft, pronounced cabbage. I now work for a company who also makes some of those splendid robots for surgeons. It's a future, but some of the robots still suffer from human error. Time will tell. Anyway, love the show, Steve. Love to Stephen Fry, Fairport Convention, old Tom Cobley and all. It's Uncle Tom Cobley, but anyway, there you go. So there you go. Good. Classic manager didn't realise that cabbage was an acronym initialization.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that sphere.
I've always enjoyed that thing when people say, anyone who imagines a level of conspiratorial wickedness has no idea of the plain, simple incompetence involved. Exactly,
of the pharmaceutical industry in this particular case. Ian Haylett, Salvation Army major, volunteer at local Ritz Cinema in Thirsk, heritage listener and contributor.
Wow.
Thank you, Ian. Given some recent discussion about the tales of Asterix the Gaul, I was reminded of the two jailers in Rome. In one of the adventures, the two jailers in Rome were appropriately called Senda Victorius and...
Happy and Glorious.
Happy and Glorious, as in Appian Pie.
Yeah,
of course. On another note, I haven't got a better name for it, but including quality streaming titles on the new show is a great idea. I was chatting to my son this week about the fact that he gasped audibly during certain episodes of Better Call Saul, as I had done this week while watching the climax of Ozark. We both struggled...
Okay, be careful, because right, I haven't got... Okay.
We both struggled to think of a movie which had the same effect on us.
Okay,
but you gasp all the time.
No, I gasp all the time. Can I just say, on the subject of the Appian Glorious, as in the Appian Way, which reminds me of one of my favourite Goon Show jokes, which I didn't understand for years. My father brought me a record of the Goon Show, which had on one side the dreaded batter pudding hurler of Bexhill-on-Sea, and on the other side, the histories of Pliny the Elder. And in the histories of Pliny the Elder, which is a Roman-themed episode, there is the joke about the Appian Way and the Appian Viaduct before they put in the Appian sewage system, which was known as the Appia Pipe.
Okay, that's very good. A joke from the 1950s. John in Leeds, with regards to your recent feature about cinema goers misunderstanding what film they're actually going to see, I have an example that directly involves your good selves.
Oh, okay.
In 2009, when you took your old project on the road for the very first time, you broadcast your show from the amazing Hyde Park Picture House in Leeds. After the broadcast, we were treated to the 35mm version of Silent Running, one of Mark's favourites.
Yes.
With Bruce Dern doing his Titch March in Space thing.
Yes.
In the break before the film started, I overheard the following conversation between two student types sat behind me. Student one, what film are we about to see? Student two, Silent Runnings. What's that about then? It's the Jamaican bobsleigh team.
Yeah.
It's a comedy.
Yeah.
They seemed strangely confused once the film started and left soon after, presumably disappointed that John Candy hadn't made an appearance. Great new show.
That is, incidentally, a mistake that has been made more than once, because I've had conversations with people and they said, what's your favourite? I said, Silent Running. They went, what, the bobsleigh? They went, no.
Not that one.
Just because it's got the word running in it, and it's not, it's Cool Runnings and Silent Running.
Very different. Neil in Epsom. I'm a heritage listener from back in the day when churchgoers were invited to publicly declare the death of narrative cinema, which was, of course, for Ice Age 2. I'm only able to go to the cinema about 2 to 3 times a year at the moment. My wife is disabled and mostly housebound, so when I do manage to go, we have developed a routine whereby fairly soon after my return, I debrief her about the film that I've seen and we talk about the trailers.
Okay.
Do you remember many years ago we had correspondence from people who went to the cinema in their pyjamas?
I do.
Underneath their clothes.
I do.
So that they, because they went on their own and they didn't want to disturb their other half. So they already were wearing their pyjamas, which is fantastic. And it's not what Neil's talking about.
Okay.
Over the years of recounting trailers, they seem to fall into categories. Trailers which make you interested in watching the film. Trailers which seem to give away all the good jokes and set pieces. And trailers which are merely meh. Well, this was completely changed by a recent cinema visit.
Okay.
I saw Top Gun Maverick, still echoes in my head from the listening to the live show.
Top Gun Maverick!
And before the film, there was a trailer slash behind the scenes slash director's view of the upcoming Jordan Peele film.
Right.
The nature and style of the short makes me compelled to see the film.
Yep.
It gave me a taste of the atmosphere, setting and score, but nothing really about plot and character.
This is Nope.
I explained it to my wife as the perfect trailer that wasn't a trailer. And I was wondering if the good doctors had seen this short and what they felt about it and trailers in general. I would also be interested to know if there have ever been other different styles of trailer that people have seen that worked for them. Thank you for all your good work and company. You have been company for 20 years, including many highs and lows. And although my wife is not a convert to the church, she will often want to know what, in quotes, your Manny thought about a certain film, actor, or director. So that means we're...
As in your man, you know, your Manny.
I've never heard it referred to.
You know, if you say, like, he's your man thingy me, it just means, you know, that person. Who's your man? You know, your man, you just... Yeah.
Yeah. I'm...
When your man gets the ball,
I have, well, to answer your point, Neil, we have talked about trailers. I'm always surprised at how much... Directors seem to have lost control of what gets put in the trailer.
The most famous example of that was Ridley Scott expressing quite openly his dismay at the fact that the Prometheus trailer had loads of things in it that he didn't want to be in it. And then the Prometheus poster had the big reveal. And it was like, but you're Ridley Scott. Imagine if even you can't control that stuff, then what hope is there for anyone else?
It was either the first Jurassic World or the second Jurassic World in the trailer. Was
the last shot of the film. The
final shot of the film.
It was the big
fish in the sea.
It was the end of the J.A. Bayona film, Fallen Kingdom, which had the surfing and the thing. I know, we'd all seen it in the trailer, and it's literally
the last shot.
Literally the last shot of the film, over which we hear the voice of Jeff Goldblum going, we are welcome to a new age. It is a Jurassic Age.
Exactly. You have to work on that.
Yeah.
But
I'm
specifically,
better if I've got a longer bit of thing.
Specifically, Neil's point about the trailer for the Jordan Peele film, it does sound as though, okay, that feels like it's something else altogether. They're thought quite creatively.
The way in which they've been promoting Nope is very interesting. There are precedents for it. I think the most famous precedent would be Alfred Hitchcock doing the trailer for Psycho, which is him walking around the house and going, well, this is where the thing happened. And here is where the other thing happened. Remember this? It's a quite a famous sort of, it's a trailer for Psycho, which is the whole point is it's Hitchcock showing you around the movie and it's really odd. And there are other examples of movie trailers. I mean, this is a slightly different thing, but in the case of the Exorcist, one of the things that sold the film was reaction footage of people coming out of the early screenings when it was square-walled into New York. And it was in something like, it was one theater for a long time, and they were filming people coming out, and people were just completely freaked out. But yeah, anything that does an interesting thing with a trailer other than showing you the final shot of the film...
Yes. I look forward to Nope. Neil, thanks very much for your email. And this one from Andy, dear OBE and NoBE, which is good. I'm an MBE, but it obviously doesn't work for the joke. Yeah. After hearing you were going to revisit Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, I thought I would add my gold doubloons worth to the film. Trivia part, I was recently chatting to my six-year-old son about the film and if it was okay for him to watch, and also about a certain Captain Jack Sparrow, who turns out was a real pirate, born as Jack Ward in about 1553 in the same town that we live in, which is Faversham in Kent.
Okay.
He was once a fisherman, but he then turned to piracy and eventually converted to Islam. I certainly haven't picked that up in any of the Pirates films.
No.
He then changed his name to Yusuf Reis, but had a nickname of Asfar, which is Arabic for bird or sparrow. I revisited the film the other day to check if it was okay for child number one. In a word, not really, as two words. It's an okay film, but nothing special. It's a shrug of the shoulders and a meh, and it's far too long. Cut an hour off.
Far too long.
There are some mildly amusing moments, and spoiler alert, who cares? Barbossa turning into his ghostly form is well done, but otherwise it's a 5 out of 10 from me. Keep up the good work. That's from Andy. If you want to get in touch for next week, correspondence@kermodemeo.com. Also, correspondence, ENTS, if you'd rather, @kermodemeo.com. Add a variety of
spell others. It as you like.
Yes, exactly. Within limits. One frame back as a take two special.
Yes.
This is where we explore films that are connected in some way to another work which we've been discussing. So you reviewed Lightyear.
I did.
On take one this week, which sounds a stinker as far as you're concerned. So this was, for many years, the imaginary film in the Toy Story series that inspired the Buzz Lightyear toy.
Yeah.
So to enhance and expand your viewing, Mark is going to choose a great film with an imaginary film inserted, like a Kinder Egg surprise.
Yes.
Okay. So your suggestions, first of all, this from A Little Bit of Everything, the extended end credits sequence of 22 Jump Street imagines a fake potted history of the rest of the franchise with a number of increasingly ridiculous potential sequels and star cameos.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. The Sad Song Company, all of them, say, one of the most joyous and entertaining movies ever and a masterpiece of a movie within a movie, One Cut of the Dead. Only discovered it a year ago and have watched it at least a dozen times since then. I haven't seen that. Dinah Feinberg, The Act of Killing, one of the most brilliant and disorientating uses of a movie in a movie device.
Yeah, I mean, that is extraordinary.
Craig says, X gave us The Farmer's Daughter, if that counts. Mike says, the Bette Davis films Inside Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, Salome in Sunset Boulevard, so many. The Lucas Lee movies in Scott Pilgrim, Black Hammer and White Lightning from Major League 2, Home for Purim in For Your Consideration, so on. Rosie says, it has to be A Tale of the Christ in Hail Caesar, which I had completely forgotten about. Tom could have done that. Jack from Sydney, I'm still waiting for the real world to catch up to the Idiocracy timeline, which I hadn't seen. That's a Luke Wilson movie, 2006.
We did talk about it when it came out.
I know, but it's 2006, man, you know? I'm planning on seeing Ass, the movie, in the biggest, loudest, most immersive cinema I can find. At the very least, it can't be worse than Pirates of the Caribbean. And who's this from? Hugh says, with Mark's review of Elvis due in the very near future, that'll be next week.
Yes.
I thought a movie within a movie from an Elvis Presley film would be appropriate here. The movie is 1965's Harum Scarum, or Harum Holiday, as it was known in the UK. It's utterly rubbish either way.
Utterly rubbish.
And the movie within the movie is Sands of the Desert, in which Elvis's Johnny Tyrone plays a Valentino-inspired romantic lead who rides a white horse and defeats leopards with karate chops using only his deadly bare hands. Then he sings to the princesses that he rescues. This five-minute film within Harum Scarum is better than all of the actual movie, which has a pre-multiverse quality in that its writer, Gerald Drayson Adams, and the film's director, Sam Katzman, took names and characters from previous low-budget Arabian adventures they'd made together and reworked them onto one of Elvis's worst films.
Harum Scarum is generally regarded to be the worst of Elvis's films.
Hugh says it has to be seen to be believed, although strangely enough, one of its songs, So Close Yet So Far From Paradise, was used in a recent TV ad for Walker's Crisps, and even that was better than Harum Scarum. Okay, so clearly sometimes it works, surprisingly, and sometimes it doesn't. So what is going to be our one frame back where people can actually get stuck in
here? These are great suggestions. I mean, I should say on the subject of, because obviously this is a lighthearted feature, on the subject of The Act of Killing, which I think is probably the most remarkable use of, because what The Act of Killing does is it uses the act of fictionally recreating an atrocity in order to make the people involved in the atrocity see for the first time perhaps what that atrocity was, is utterly soul-shaking. And I struggle to think of another film that has used that act of recreation on screen as well. And for that reason, I won't include it here, because I kind of think that that film exists on a plane that is, that, you know, it shouldn't be tainted by me, you know, somehow picking, but I think it's a brilliant choice and well done. If you've never seen
that's
The Act of
Killing, that's Dinah Feinberg.
It is an absolutely astonishing piece of work, a really, really astonishing piece of work. Of the things that have been suggested, I love the fact that The Farmer's Daughter in X came up. I absolutely, and same as you, hadn't thought about A Tale of the Christ until the Hail Caesar, which, if you remember, the best moment when you're watching The Tale of the Christ, in which it says, divine presence to be shot, because they haven't yet
haven't done it.
It's a whole thing about how you go. What I'm actually going to go for, which, funnily enough, hasn't been included in this list, but it's something that I would like to direct people to, because I'm sure you can still find it. There is a brilliant Joe Dante film from the 1990s called Matinee, and it stars John Goodman. And it's basically kind of inspired by William Castle, who was the kind of the gizmo king of exploitation cinema. So he was the guy who gave us Percepto, which, you know, they'd wire little electrical buzzers to seats to give people a shock as the tingler, you know, the tingler was doing its stuff. And it, to hit, you know, skeletons flying overhead, stuff. I mean, basically the forerunner of what we now think of as 4DX, William Castle invented all this stuff. Well, in Matinee, John Candy's character, who is the kind of William Castle figure, is promoting this movie, which is Mant, half man, half ant, almost. And it's just genius. It's absolutely brilliant. And that film is a kind of parody of a whole bunch of actually existing B-movies. But it's, I came out of Matinee thinking, I want to see the whole of Mant. I want to see it as an actual standalone feature. So my movie within a movie choice would be Mant from Matinee, which is Joe Dante film starring John Goodman. I think I wrote the lead feature for Sight and Sound on that film when it came out in the early 90s.
My goodness, wow. We've been going a long time.
Wow.
Because then we hooked up around 1941.
That's right, we did. Yeah, that's right. And but I don't think it kind of ever got the recognition it deserved. If you've never seen Matinee, check it out. It is such a great movie. And you can buy it or rent it, Amazon, Google Play, or YouTube. It's widely available.
Excellent. Thanks for the tip. Next week, so you've reviewed Good Luck to You, Leo Grand.
Yes.
So how about picking an age gap movie?
Oh, okay. Yeah, fine. Yeah, we'll do that. Age gap movie. Best age gap movie.
Because sometimes the age gap is like clunkingly embarrassing and sometimes it really works.
Yeah, and sometimes it's addressed and sometimes it's ignored.
Okay.
I have another review for you before we finish, incidentally. I hope you know that.
Yeah.
I just don't want to get sidelined.
Well, why don't you do it now? Because otherwise I'll forget.
Pleasure.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which this opened in cinemas briefly on the 15th, but it's on Mubi from today. This is a feature from a Swedish filmmaker. Her name is spelled Ninja Tyberg. I interviewed her and her name in Sweden would be pronounced Ninja Tibri. But I said, how would you like me to say it?
Do that again.
Ninja Tibri.
I like that.
And she said, no, call me Ninja Tyberg. And I said, oh, really? Why? She said, well, because I prefer it to be said like that. So then when people try and spell it, they spell it properly. She said, this is quite a common thing that apparently if you have a Swedish name, you actually prefer the Anglicized. So she requested that she be referred to as Ninja Tyberg, which I understand is not how the name is.
Also, if you've got Ninja as a first name, you're going to use that.
Exactly.
Aren't you?
So this is a tale of a young woman, Bella, played by Sophie Capel, who arrives in LA to be the next big porn superstar. This is her dream. And the film follows her journey through the porn industry, good and bad. There's a lot of filling out consent forms, showing ID, being asked exactly what she's willing to do and what she isn't willing to do, signing up for rough scenes because that's apparently what it takes to be noticed, having her pictures taken for her portfolio. In the scene that we're about to hear, well, you and I will see it as well, she's being photographed by a somewhat aggressive photographer and a rival model is looking on disapprovingly and at one point takes out her phone as if to take a photograph of her to mock her, at which point one of her friends intervenes. So it's also about rivalry between the actors within the industry. Here's the clip.
Okay, feet together, bend the knees.
We got a deal. All right,
cool. Okay, knees together, bend them at same level. Stick the butt out, arch, and face to me. Boom, flag that. Yes, kind of. Yeah, give me the smile, a nice smile. Come on, so sexy, be sexy. Okay, go sideways, like the face down like this, and look at me, open your elbow, yeah, put your arms back, yes.
Hey! No one takes pictures for free.
So what's interesting in that clip is that it begins with the photograph being taken by this, you know, male photographer, and then her friend comes in and says to me, no, okay, this is how we're going to do this. And Ninja Tyberg said that her primary reason for wanting to do the film was to do with the female gaze. What she wanted to do was to look at an industry which is absolutely geared to the male gaze and see it through the eyes of the performers, to see it with a female gaze. And she cited Lucas Moodysson's film Ilya Forever as a particular influence. There is a really grotesque, very, very harrowing rape scene in that film in which it is all seen from the point of view of the woman. It is it's really harrowing, but it's also, okay, if this is how you're going to do this scene, this is the way to do it because it's turning the gaze round. The fact that it's a rape scene that she cites as influential is also significant, because this is a very grim portrait of an industry in which the idea of consent, we see a lot of stuff about filling out the forms. You consent to do this, you agree, you understand that at any point you can stop the shoot, and she says, yes. But then what happens is, but can you? And Ninja Tybeck said that when she was doing her research, she spoke to a lot of people who said that they were all told the same thing. You know, you can do this, but you can stop at any time. And she said, okay, well, when was the last time you actually did? And the answer was, well, never. Because if you want to carry on working in the industry, you don't. What you want to do is you want to be somebody who is seen as somebody who will do whatever is necessary to get the job done. So the subject matter is increasingly dark, and a lot of this is very distressing, and it won't be for everybody. What's also interesting is that the palette of the film, as you saw from that, is pink, shiny, bright. And so there is this deliberate kind of counterpointing of the way the film looks, this bright, shiny surface, and what's going on underneath, which is kind of like a journey into the heart of darkness. And also what it's about is the way, I mean, it's not a simple victim story. It's about the way in which, as our central character becomes immersed in the industry, she changes and she becomes part of it. And the human relationships that she had, particularly in that scene, as you saw a friend coming to her aid, that starts to fall away, because what she starts to realize is that in order to be a part of this machine, that element of involved empathy and compassion has to fall away. So it's a tough watch, no question about it. But it's not a simplistic watch. It's not simplistically moralizing. It is, I think many people will quite understandably find it too tough to watch, but I think it's very well made, and I think we will see lots more interesting work from Ninja Tybeck, Ninja Tybeck in the future. I think she's a talent to watch out for.
And is that a cinematic?
It's on Mubi now. It did have a brief theatrical release, like a theatrical platform on the 15th, but it is now available on Mubi. It may well still be in some cinemas, but it is on Mubi.
So take it or leave it, you decide. This is our word of mouth feature.
Yeah.
Because there is so much media out there. It's very easy. Well, basically, you cannot watch most of it because just when you think you've subscribed to everything.
Everything everywhere all at once.
There's Starplay and there's Uberstrap, and I don't know. And
Uberstrap?
Uberstrap, $3.95 for a month or so. I don't know. This have you not subscribed?
I haven't subscribed to Uberstrap.
Everyone is going
What's
to,
available on Uberstrap?
I can't remember. It's the same
is
stuff.
Is it films from the 1930s that we watched when we were young?
Almost certainly, you know, with taxis arriving. So lots of votes for this particular one. Greg in Bristol. Heritage LTL Vanguardista here, wrestling with how best to persuade Mark to review Severance on Apple TV. It's a struggle because I'm so desperate for him to experience it that I'm putting huge pressure on myself to argue compellingly for its inclusion in the show. If only I could isolate a part of myself, task it with writing... I think you're overthinking this, Greg.
No, he's doing it with okay. Reference to the programme. Go on.
Task it with writing this email and remain entirely oblivious as to the emotional toll it would take.
That's very cleverly done.
Ham-fisted attempts to describe the premise aside, put simply, Severance is the smartest, most stylistically breathtaking, exciting, funny and rewatchable show I've seen in years. It's written and directed in part by Ben Stiller, so there's your film adjacent angle. I'm watching it for the second time, this time with my wife, and I have to stop myself being the most annoying human alive saying, OMG, that's so brilliant, as I spot this subtle visual clues drop throughout. If it's compelling, striking and disorientating the first time, it reveals its true genius on a second watch. Honestly, what a show. I'm convinced Mark will be blown away by it, and it's got Christopher Walken in it, so there's that too. I really hope others have been in touch to make the same argument, because I can't be the only person who's completely stunned by Severance. Tickety-tonk if we're still doing that. Greg, thank you. You're not the only one. Paul McElroy, Severance on Apple TV is wonderful, slow-burn sci-fi, getting a lot of attention in the US, but maybe slipping under the radar here. In an era when sci-fi TV often just throws as many ideas at you as possible, hoping a couple of them will stick, Severance takes a very simple premise and executes it beautifully. Great performances all round, especially from John Turturro. P.S. Avoid trailers, as the first episode will be a lot more fun the less you know. Alex in Cornwall, thank you. This is Paul McElroy. Dear Platy and Jubes, Severance on Apple TV is a series about people who have their work life and memories surgically split from their home life. It's the most entertainingly baffling thing I've seen since Twin Peaks. So I think that's it. Yes, take it or leave it. You decide. You went for Severance on Apple TV. And this
I did.
Is, yes.
So here's what's interesting. So I've done two episodes of Severance because they're hour-long episodes. And I knew nothing about it at all other than that it had been recommended by a lot of people. I didn't see any of the trailers. I didn't read any of the reviews. In fact, with the first one it said Severance, I thought they meant the film from a while ago. That was, oh, never mind, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, there is a very interesting British horror movie called Severance, a horror movie called Severance. Anyway, so.
Does it involve severing of bodily items?
Yes, but it also, yes, but let's not spoil it.
Let's not go there.
So this is sci-fi series on Apple, created by Dan Erickson, as they said, Ben Stiller's involvement. So starts with a woman waking up in an office on a desk, doesn't know where she is, doesn't know who she is, doesn't know how she got there. So a kind of Kafka-esque opening. It becomes apparent that she has signed up for the Severance program, which separates your work-life consciousness. You have an operation and an implant, which means that when you descend into the basement of Lumen Industries or into the bowels of Lumen Industries, you forget your outside life. You only know what you're doing in Lumen Industries. Then when you go back in the elevator, back to outside, you forget what you've been doing in the work, and then you go back out and you live your outside. So there are two completely different versions of you. The one that's living on the outside, the outie, and the one that's working in Lumen Industries. Exactly what the work is unclear. It's brilliantly vague, which is what the workers do is they sit at terminals looking at numbers on screens. Well, this is what am I doing? Well, you're looking for anomalies. You're looking for numbers that make you feel scared. What are you talking about? It says that all the information is codified, so we can't understand what it is that we're doing. But you just look for numbers that make you, and when you see the numbers that make you feel scared, bad information, you get rid of them. And she sits there doing it. She doesn't understand what's it. And then she suddenly is frightened of the number 5. And so they're doing something that they don't understand what it is, but they know that on an instinctive level, they're doing it. They're also doing it in a separated work life in which their work self only knows their work self's life, and their outie self only knows their outie life. This is then complicated even further. This is just the first two episodes by the fact that a character, and I don't want to do any spoilers at all, a character who is in the work environment then turns up in the outside environment, but you don't know at first that they are the same character. And when you realize that they're the same character, you don't know whether that character actually knows that they are the same character from outside and inside. Plus, again, all in the first two episodes, an approach is made to our central character by somebody who says, I have escaped the program and I have to tell you, you need to find out what's going on because it's really, really bad. Meanwhile, back down in the basement, we have Christopher Walken who forms a kind of bond with John Turturro's character. John Turturro's character is starting to have hallucinations about black gloop crawling all over his keyboard. And he strikes up this strangely connected relationship with Christopher Walken. You're not entirely sure what it's a design connection, but you're not entirely sure what it is. I thought it was really engrossing. I said to Simon Paul, producer Simon Paul, I've been watching Severance. He said, how much have you watched? I said, well, the first two episodes. He said, okay, watch more. Because he said, there's a lot of sever before you get to the ants. And I have no idea what he means by that. Because I have no idea where this is going to go, but I am going to find out. Because, do you remember that Irish film, Vivarium?
I do remember that.
Okay.
There you go. You've tossed me a question and I can answer in the affirmative.
There is a little of that because in that, if you remember, a couple go to see an ideal home and they get driven into this environment that they then can't get out of.
Jesse Eisenberg.
Jesse Eisenberg. Yeah. Well done. Yeah. They then can't get out of the environment and it is like the Vivarium of the title. They are in a kind of a world which is real but unreal at the same time. And it's, again, a Kafka-esque setup, but it works rather well. I thought in the case of that, it felt like, again, perhaps should have been a short film, but it was like a tale of the unexpected. In the case of this, I found so much of watching the first two episodes not going, hang on, this is frustrating, but this is really fascinating. This is actually working. I am now completely gripped by this idea of the people in the work environment not knowing who they are in the outside environment and finding that an absolutely paranoia-inducing circumstance. And also because people talk so much about the work-life divide. You know, you leave your work, you shut the door, you go back and do your thing. Well, what if you actually did divide somebody? And somebody says at one point, well, what if you started having an affair? How would you even know what the other half of you was doing? So now, I don't know where this is going. I don't know what Lumen Industries are up to. I don't know what it is that they're...
They're up to no good, though.
They're up to no good. They're called Lumen Industries. They've clearly walked out of a David Cronenberg film. But I don't know. But I am really gripped and intrigued, and I am going to watch the rest of it because it's got under my skin. And please don't anybody tell me any more than that.
What is it with the number five? Should we all be scared of the number five?
No, it's just in this particular sequence of numbers, right. That is the number. And what they're looking at sequential at numbers that are like presented on screen like a grid, and they just have to look at them until one of, and it's a really brilliant sequence because she says, this number is worrying. She says, okay, right, can you see the boundaries of the anomaly? And she starts looping in other, and he says, yes, all these numbers are wrong. Okay, then take them out. What does it mean? No idea. So doing something on an instinctive level that you don't know what it is. I already suspect that what they're doing is something utterly ghastly, but I have no idea.
I mean, they're not going to be making vegetarian sausages, are they? I mean,
one of her colleagues thinks that what they're doing is clearing the ocean floor because they don't know what's going on in the outside world. He says, "Look, do the maths. Okay, we don't know what we're doing on the outside world. We've agreed to have our consciousness severed. I presume the outside world has burnt to a crisp, and we're now all living underwater."
Why would they agree to it in the first place?
And there's the point.
So things must be really bad, or they're being paid shed load of money. Okay. Or they've got Wine 52 delivering them booze whenever they want. They snap their fingers.
But we see them in the outside world and we see them in the Lumen world. So we have a privileged point of view. So it's that I think there's something really alarming about that concept of severing a part of your consciousness because it's doing something. I mean, this is something which has turned up in science fiction stories before, you know, putting off a part of your brain which knows a whole bunch of stuff that you need not to know. I mean,
so if you go home and the good lady, I've got the ceramicist, you have the professor indoors.
That's correct. Well done for remembering your wife and mine.
That's right. And if she says, how was your day? You'd have nothing to say.
I've got absolutely no idea.
You talk about the train journey and that's it.
Yeah, but it's really good. And I don't know what Paul meant when he said there's a lot of seven before the ants.
It doesn't really work because...
But it kind of did because I'm now intrigued.
Implies that there are ants later, which have been severed. That's not a very nice thought.
No.
Yes, your thoughts on this would be very welcome. Also, if you want to suggest something that Mark should really, really, really be watching, in fact, that everybody should be watching.
Yeah, make it good suggestions because I've been given some very good... Hips.
So far. Yes. correspondence@kermanandmayo.com. Okay, so that's Severance, and that's on Apple TV Plus.
Apple TV Plus.
If you have a suggestion for Mark that he definitely needs to have seen because he doesn't actually qualify as a human being without having seen something and having an opinion about it, and you're very worried about the fact he hasn't seen it because he hasn't mentioned it, let us know. correspondence@kermanandmayo.com. That's it for take two. I'm sure there'll be other fabulous extras turning up any minute now.
Yeah, check your inbox.
Yeah.
Where's your electronic mail.
Also, I'd like some Pinot Grigio, please. Wine 52?